This is the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. Here's your host, Jessica Coody, and Husker Radio Network analyst, Jeremiah Searles.
Welcome into a summer edition of the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, alongside Jeremiah Searles. I'm Jessica Coody, and can you believe this is our last podcast before the Huskers will be full go into fall camp for the 2024 season? Searles, it seems like it takes so long. It goes so fast, but then it takes so long to get here. But it's finally, we are now quickly approaching. I think Greg texted me last week and he said, enjoy your weekend. We only have three more left without football.
Yeah, you know, as soon as the 4th of July hits, like the day after July 5th, it's football season. Like that, as a player, as a guy that's a fan, like there's just something about the July 4th holiday that marks like line in the sand that's like, it's no longer summer and football season is here, right? And I think that's kind of where a lot of guys' heads are at. I mean, a lot of the guys I talked to, that's how we all kind of thought, was like, that was the last like off-season moment was 4th of July, and then we just roll right into football season from here until December.
So just a few things, topics we want to get into today and cover since the last time we chatted, but you know, we had Coach Raiola on for our position previews last week and talked a lot about, you know, dove into all the guys on his position group. But one of the things that we had talked about, though, is that this summer they changed a little bit of the rules, less restrictive on what they can do with the coaches being with the players. So for the offensive line specifically, being able to have a football and some of those things, how does that help the offensive line before you can actually get on the field for fall camp?
Yeah, you know, I mean, a football side is majority just for the centers, right, which is enormously important. I mean, it's not something to be understated to be able to get more reps snapping the football live, because that starts every play, right? If you can't have a quality quarterback-center exchange, then the play is dead on arrival. So the more ability to do that and to get healthy with that, because I've always said the best centers are the ones that can snap as easy as they blink. Like it's a second nature to them, right? That's just like, they could be standing there having a conversation with you and shotgun snap all the live long day, and it's just as normal to them as any other movement. So the more reps that you can get as a young center or even as a veteran center, you can never have enough live snap reps. So I think that's going to be very important as well. And then obviously there's five guys on the field at each time, so the more coaches, the more eyes, the more ability to see things and correct in real time and not have to wait, go watch the film, and then correct in the meeting room, you can get a lot more accomplished on the field.
So it's funny, I've talked to a couple of the guys during this time, especially during the month of July, and they both talked about how difficult this time is. And you have not beat around the bush. You hated this time. It's a kind of conditioning, right? Take us through what especially the month of July is like before you start playing football again.
Yeah, July sucks. I mean, there's really no other way to put it. I mean, especially as a fat kid, because you're just trying to get in shape. Like, it's no longer about getting fat, bigger, and stronger. You know, at this point of the summer, it's about getting yourself in condition and shape to enter into fall camp and enter into a long 12-week grinding season. And that just requires a lot of running. Unfortunately, a lot of running, a lot of pushing sleds, a lot of just cardiovascular, getting your body in shape. But it's always funny to me, no matter how good a shape I was in, right, no matter how much I ran, no matter how much I did things, first couple days of pads, you're still just exhausted. Like, you're just gassed, right? Because there's no proper way to condition like playing football, right? You can be in elite shape, but is there something about when you're trying to just go and run plays and hit guys and pass protect and move, and it's such a different level of conditioning. I had a coach, I can't remember who it was, that used to say we're callousing our bodies. Right, like how do you create a callus, right? By lifting or whatever it is, you just keep repetitive until it starts making skin over skin over skin to where it's just a hard body, right? And that's what you do during training camp. You're just callousing your body, right? You're callousing your shoulders, your neck, everything, getting used to getting hit. But getting to that point requires a lot of physical exertion and running. And as a fat kid, yeah, it's not fun.
Terrible.
It's not a joyous time.
One of the things that Coach Raiola hit on and then the offensive lineman I've talked about is, or talk to, we hear all the time about, you know, their bonds and getting closer and all of that and how close of a group they are and how close-knit they are. And even Justin Evans said, you know, working on getting closer. I joke with him. I was like, can you guys even get any closer? But it continues to be a harping point for this group specifically. And Coach Raiola dove into that about how much that translates to when you are on the field together. So can you maybe give us a perspective of what that's like when you are such a tight-knit unit, how that does end up translating and become a positive when you're out there in the fire on the football field on game day?
Yeah, the O-line specifically is the unit within the unit, right? There's the offense, there's the defense, and then there's the O-line. Because we're the one position that has five guys on the field at one time, right, in unison together, right? There might be five receivers on the field, but you're going to have three on one side, maybe two on another, right? But when you have five guys within a 10-yard box, the synergy between those five guys has to be flawless in order to be good. You have to be able to know as the right tackle and have full trust of what the left tackle is doing, not just on an X's and O's standpoint, but from an effort standpoint, from a, is he mentally locked in? Is he okay? Can I notice if he's got something going on? Hey, can we come to the sideline? Can we communicate and all speak the same language? Right? Can we all look at each other and be able to understand, hey, this is the heat of the moment. If I say something to you that is about your play, about what I need from you, better, worse, whatever it is, you're not going to take it personally as an attack because I know we're so close off the field and we're boys and we're brothers and we've been through everything. But there just is a level of respect there that needs to come. And that all just comes from being really tight-knit, having the trust with each other, being through the battles off and on the field of, hey, when things get tough, I know I could call that dude and he'd be there for me in a heartbeat, right? And then when the bullets are flying in real time, I know that he can get down on me and I won't take it personal. I can get down on him because we're just demanding the best out of each other. And that doesn't happen unless you all love each other in the room because you know it, I know it. When things go south, we're the first to blame, right? It's our fault. Quarterback can't be protected. The run game's not working. We're not generating push, this, that, and the other thing, right? It poop rolls downhill and O-line's sitting at the bottom, right? And then when things are going great and you're winning and you're killing it, man, those running backs are smashing those holes. Do you see that pass that he had? Do you see that catch that tight end had? Wow, that was incredible, right? And so you just have to understand when you're in that unit within the unit, you are your only cheerleader, you are your only critic, and block out the rest. And that is what Rayola is talking about when this is such a tight-knit group is you protect your own. You protect that room. You protect everyone in it. And when you have a culture that's built like that, that's really hard to rattle an O-line room, right? They become the heartbeat. They become the centerpiece of the whole team if done correctly.
I think you've talked about this before, about a couple of the guys you played with by the time you got to your senior year and you had played 3 or 4 years together. It was like you could just point. And you didn't even have to really communicate. You feel like this has got to be a group that's getting almost to that point, and that's really vital as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we got to a point where, I mean, it was almost no need for verbal communication up front, right? I had played next to Spencer for 3 years. Qualley had played next to Cole. Cole played center. He knew where we all were going. Like, it got to the point where we came up, we knew the play. He'd mic point it, and then we all just knew what we were doing from there. And it's like I said, I was playing right or left tackle, but I knew because I've known Qualley for 5 years that on the right side, if I'm playing left, he's playing right, I know he knows exactly what he's doing. I don't have to worry about it, right? And then I know that the center's going to get us lined up right. I know that we're going to get the protections right. And this group is going to be very similar to that, right? You got Ben Scott coming in on another year. Ben Hart's played a lot of football. Now you've got some new guards in there. Right, you got some new guards, so the verbal communication is going to be incredibly important. But just knowing that everyone's on the same page and that everyone's going to hold each other to that same standard, I think that's what's going to be really special about this room.
Valentino's, a slice of home you just can't get anywhere else. What started with a treasured family recipe in Lincoln, Nebraska, has become a classic Italian tradition for 65 years.
Okay, so your perspective now on this, because you played a college football season and then you turned right around and played in the NFL, you work closely with guys that have done it as well. How big of an adjustment is it for teams that go into a season, and now you're talking about an extended college football playoff and how that can affect just how you approach an entire season?
Yeah, you got to start investing more time and more purpose into your body. I mean, an 18-game season is a grind. I mean, a mental, a physical, like the NFL season is a grind because that doesn't include the 3 preseason games. And if you make a playoff run, you're talking about playing close to 21, 22 games in a year, right? In college, you're very used to Thanksgiving time rolls around. You're like, all right, get through Thanksgiving, have myself some fat turkey dinner, start preparing for either a championship game or a bowl prep, right? That's not really the case anymore for a lot of teams. Playoffs, man. And I'll tell you this, just like the NFL, and these kids don't know it yet, but there's something different about the intensity of playoff football. and I don't care at what level it is, high school, it's going to be in college, not the NFL, everything gets up a notch. I mean, the speed of practice, the speed of the game, the emotions, the intensity, the margins for error, everything gets elevated so much that it can really wear and tear on you mentally and physically and emotionally. So, you know, preparing for your season now that you come out of the gate the right way and you pace yourself and you don't come out so fast that you taper off in November, or, you know, you don't start so slow that you don't give yourself a chance to make a difference in November, is going to be super important for how these teams that want playoff contention and playoff hopes really manage their roster, manage their teams, and manage their bodies.
And to your point, too, earlier about just you got to have a whole room full of offensive linemen ready to go at any point in the season. And, you know, Coach Royola was talking about cross-training guys and making sure that they're comfortable in all the different spots on the line. And then they start honing in on that position once you get closer to fall camp and during this time. Can you take us through that and just, you know, what that's like for an offensive lineman, just training on every spot and then figuring out, okay, where is this guy best? Where is he most comfortable? How that becomes evident, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if you're not a solidified starter, versatility is your friend. That's how you crack the two deep. That's how you crack an opportunity to get on the field on Saturday if you're not a true starter. And, you know, it can be tough, but for the development of a player, it's phenomenal, right? It's not easy by any means. You know, switching sides in the middle of a practice, going from guard to tackle or center to guard in the middle of a practice is tough. I mean, from how I set, how I throw my hands, to my timing, to what foot is staggered backwards, to being able to flip the plays in your head, like, okay, if I'm on the right side, I'm on the front side, now I'm on the back side, so now I'm on the left side, so now I'm on the back side, and all that's happening. So, I mean, it's really tough to do, but if you can do it well, excuse me, your development's off the charts. And that's when you start to see, okay, this guy's developing really well from a maturity standpoint, and he's getting bigger, faster, stronger. Let me see if I can just leave him at left guard for the next couple weeks and see if he can take that next step. Hmm. Or let me see if he can play tackle and leave him there and see if he can really take that next step. And then that's where you go, okay, now this guy, okay, we know he's a left guard, right? We tried him at right, we tried him at center, but like this is his best position. Let's let him stay here, make a home here, develop here, and then hopefully be a starter for us in that year or the following year.
Fascinating. Okay, let's dive into kind of buried the big story here, but change at the secondary coach position, assistant coach, and immediately I know everyone was shocked with the departure of Evan Cooper, but you, when the news started coming out that it was going to be John Butler, you immediately texted Greg and me and said, I really like that guy. I was a big fan of his. You worked with him when you were in Buffalo. He was in Buffalo. So what is it about John Butler that you think he's going to be a good fit here? And what is it that you saw in him that you're like, okay, that's a good defensive backs coach?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to spend 2 years with him out there. And, you know, he got to work with some phenomenal defensive backs in the Buffalo room. You know, you had Micah Hyde, you had Jordan Poyer, you had Tre'Davious Wright, Levi Wallace, right? Like, you had some really good dudes. But I got to see how those guys progressed over 2 years, right? Poyer came to us as kind of a okay player, kind of on the back end of his career, ended up turning himself into a Pro Bowl player and having big money. Micah Hyde came from Green Bay, came in, ended up being a Pro Bowler too. And, you know, he's just very good at getting the most out of his guys. And I think he's an excellent teacher. I think he knows the position inside and out. He brings NFL concepts. He's been around Pro Bowlers. He's been around developmental guys, and he's done it all. You know, so I think Matt Rhule bringing him into this system with Tony White, he's going to fit in really well. He's going to bring a lot of different looks and fresh ideas that are straight out of the NFL from a Buffalo team that's been wildly successful for a long time and just continue to walk right into that. So, yes, as upsetting and as sad as it was to see the departure of Coach Cooper, because I know how much he meant to Coach Rhule and how much he meant to this program, I feel like Tom Butler was a phenomenal hire. I feel like it was a great fit. I think he's going to come in here and do great things.
The NFL ties and being that's we see a lot of that within this staff, how important is that to be able to have somebody that's coming in from the NFL and fits, I guess, that approaching it like a pro and just some of the things that they have brought from the NFL, I guess that's got to be a good fit too, just being that he's right fresh from the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you want guys out of the NFL. You want guys that have been coaching at the pinnacle of the sport, right? It doesn't get any higher than the NFL. It doesn't get any higher than a couple AFC championships games besides the Super Bowl, right? I mean, he's been right there in critical moments. They've won big-time games. They've found ways to win games, right? He brings all kinds of checkboxes of what you want in a coach. And then, you know, the big question is, how does he recruit? And time will tell with that. But I'll tell you this. If you're recruiting and say, hey, I've coached multiple guys that have been Pro Bowlers in the NFL, I'm going to give you that same coaching to give yourself a chance to go to the NFL, that's an intriguing recruiting tactic. That's a thing that would, if I was a recruit and I was sitting there going, man, I think I want to play for that guy, right? I want him to pour into me of every NFL concept and every NFL tool that he gave guys like Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, and I want them to give that to me so that I can become the best that I can be. So I think that he has a good blend of that, and I think Coach Rhule saw that as well in him.
Timing, obviously not ideal, but is there something that I guess maybe gives you comfort being where he came from, what you know about him just working in the NFL that will allow maybe for a little bit of an easier transition at this point?
I think it's going to be tough. I mean, it's just you can't create more time, right? Like the time you get 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, yeah. Right? And there's only so much that you can do in that time of what you need to do to get caught up to speed. But the great news is the NFL moves at a rapid and very rapid pace. So, I mean, he's not unused to hard work. He's not unused to long hours, right? Like, and he's going to put everything in, you know, so the learning curve, I don't think is going to be super steep, but by no other means, it's going to be a learning curve. And there's going to be some bumps in the road as we go. But I promise you, him and Tony White are burning the midnight oil, getting everything installed and everything that he wants out of his DBs and what he needs to have ready to go as training camp opens.
So if you're John Butler and this all happens, unfolds, what are the first things that you're doing here before fall camp?
I'm making sure I connect with all my players, mm-hmm. right? I'm making sure that I reach out to every single one of them individually, make sure I try and get a quick glimpse of, hey, how do you tick? What did you like about the old coach? What did you not like? How can I make you better? What do you need from me? What are some expectations that I have of you? Right, like, hey, this is how I run my room. This is what I expect from you. Be on time. Do those things. Here's how we're going to practice. If I get on you, don't have thin skin, have thick skin. Right, and just laying expectations out the best you can of what to expect when we get on the football field. Right, and then hearing from your veterans, hearing from guys like Singleton and those guys of, hey, how is the room? Who's my hard guys? Who's my guy to go to? Who are the guys I can rely on? Right. And putting a little bit of trust back into your players and showing that there's that mutual, hey, I'm not going to stand here and prove that I'm just the new guy on the block and I'm swinging the big bat. Like, yes, you must respect me. I am the coach, but like, how can I get the best out of you? And I think that, you know, that's the NFL model, right? The NFL model is very rarely does a coach just sit up on his soapbox and be like, you will listen to me and I will not listen to you. Right. That doesn't last long in the NFL, right? It's all about collaboration. It's all about hearing and talking. And I think that he needs to do that with his coaches. And then once they get on the football field, be very clear of the expectations that he expects from them in the practice field.
Got to help to have a guy like Isaac Gifford, right? In your room at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I promise you, Giff and him have been on the phone plenty, talking about all kinds of different things. I mean, you're very glad a guy like Isaac Gifford is back for his last year, especially with the coaching change like that.
How does he go about, because I think the corner position is the one that we're circling and, okay, what do we do there with some departures there? But what's his approach to that and figuring out, okay, which corners are going to be reliable for us going into this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to start with him first evaluating the spring ball tape, right? I mean, he's going to have to go back through and watch all those guys' reps through spring ball and see, okay, who do I like? Who do I still need as, like, my tiers, right? How am I going to tier these guys out? My tier ones, guys that I think could be starters right now, my tier two guys that are really close, and then my tier three guys that are my development guys. And how do I structure the reps in such a way that I'm giving the tier one guys plenty of time to compete, I'm giving the tier two guys a chance to push the tier one guys and move themselves up into that tier, and then really making sure that I leave time for these tier three developmental guys that we may need throughout the season, or they're going to redshirt, or, hey, they're far off from playing, how do I make sure they're also continuing to get better every single day, right? So I think that's more at the corner position. You have to look at that, and then you have to teach it the way you want it played. Corner is a very technical position, right? And yes, it takes a very good athlete to play out on the edge, but the great corners are extremely technical in how they get out of their back pedals, how they get out of their breaks, eye discipline, not getting caught with their eyes in the backfield, not getting handsy and getting penalties and pass interferences. Like, it's a very technical position. So I know from him being with the guys in Buffalo and hearing the way he coached them, if they can't do it technically sound the way he wants it done, he'll find someone else that can. And I think that's a great thing to have because, man, nothing kills a drive more when you've got a team backed up and third and long and you bail them out with a bad holding or a bad penalty on PI because you weren't eye disciplined or you got a little grabby or you were sloppy in your technique. So I think those are going to be the guys that get on the field for him on Saturday, are the ones that can technically do it the way he's coaching it.
Okay, good stuff there. I'm sure we will dive into all things, continue to talking John Butler as we move into fall camp. But a couple
this might be the most we've ever spoken about the DBs.
It's your favorite position, you know? I had to give you plenty of time.
My favorite position, really had to dive deep on those boys.
A couple other big news items I didn't want to get, your take on. Speaking of Isaac Gifford, he was selected to be one of the guys that represents Nebraska at Big Ten Media Days, along with Ben Scott, Ty Robinson. I don't think anybody was surprised by that trio, yourself included.
Yeah, no, I mean, you couldn't ask for three better ambassadors of the university. I mean, all three of the guys have been playing football a long time. They all know what the end means, and they're all going to go out there and do a great job at Media Day.
Okay, but I did want to specifically dive into Ben Scott because that was another thing that Coach Raiola talked about. He's a great leader for the offensive line. Now his challenge is being a leader for the entire football team. What's that like when you start to take that step where you're not just the leader of your group, of your position group in the offensive line, but you're being looked to take on more of a role, a leadership role for an entire football team?
You know, first of all, it speaks to him and his work ethic. You know, you don't get told that. You earn that, right? Like, it's not like someone where the coach comes up to you and goes, hey, you're the leader of the team. We need you to be the leader of the team. No, it's very much of how you worked all through the winter, all through the spring, continuing into summer, right? Like, naturally, people are looking up to you because of how hard you've worked and how you've done things the right way, right? And coming from a guy that transferred here 2 years ago, right, that's a really hard thing to do as a transfer, right? Walking into a room and being that. And, you know, so last year we sought to see him grow as a leader within the room. Now we've got to see him grow as a leader within the team. And all that tells me is that the peers on the team really, really respect him. And he does things the absolute right way.
Nice that that's the guy at the center spot, right? Going into
a
season. Yeah.
It very much helps having that guy at the center position.
All right, last thing I wanted to talk to you about, the Nebraska Football Hall of Fame class is announced, and your guy, Rex Burkhart, is a part of that group. And we did a podcast last year diving into the Ohio State game, some classic games inside Memorial Stadium. That's one of your favorite teammates ever, right, Rex Burkhead?
Yeah, I mean, I just saw Rex last week at the Team Jack golf event. He still looks like he could carry the rock in the A-gap 20 times on Sunday. I mean, he's phenomenal. But that dude is maybe one of the best humans I've ever met in my entire life. And not just from a football standpoint, but just from an overall guy. I mean, from the day we stepped on campus in June of 2009, that dude was a leader of us. I can remember we all didn't have workouts our first week there, and we all kind of sitting around, and Rex texts all of us like, hey, I'm going to work out at the stadium. Who's coming? And we're like, got it. We're coming with you, dude. Right. And then going to watch him play as a true freshman and all the things he went through, from broken foot to, you know, dealing with some other stuff and getting injured his senior year and battling back. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me the dude played 9 years in the NFL. I mean, he's just built the right way. And he was the heartbeat of our offense for such a long time. And I got so blessed to play with so many good backs while I was here. You know, but Rex Burkhead takes the cake for best teammate, best guy. I mean, anyone that you could ask for.
What was your perspective being on the field with him, blocking for him, and seeing some of the incredible plays that he made throughout his career?
You know, you knew when Rex had the ball that something special could happen at any moment, right? Like, you knew he didn't have the speed where you were like, that dude's like Taylor, right? You knew with Taylor, it was one cut and good luck, you ain't going to catch him. Right. But with Rex, it was like, who's he going to put in a spin cycle? Who's he going to run over? Like, how's he going to create something out of here that's just only the vision and the patience that he has as a running back he'll be able to do? And, you know, when I can specifically remember, I think it was 2012, we were playing Iowa and it was freezing cold outside. I mean, it was miserable. No one wanted to be there, including the players. And he was coming off the MCL. And, you know, we were struggling to do anything on offense in the first half and he wasn't really playing. And I remember he came in at halftime and he's like, boys, I'm done with this. Give me the ball. And we handed him the ball like 20 times in the second half. And he led us down the field, got us a touchdown. And, you know, it just kind of reinvigorated all of us. And, you know, our guys back out there, our captain, our leader, our dude. And, you know, so you always just, you knew you were going to play your heart out for that guy because he was going to leave it all out there on the field every single time he touched the ball.
Wow, that gives me chills. All right, last thing I wanted to close out the pod with, because, again, this will be the last time we chat before fall camp, and so the next time we have a conversation, fall camp will be underway. So going into the start of practice, which position group are you most intrigued by, you paying closest attention to? I'm assuming this might be a question.
I mean, obviously the O-line. I mean, that's no secret. But we'll eliminate the O-line, right? We'll eliminate the O-line from this question. You know, for me, it's going to be inside backers, right? Inside backers, you know, last year this time it was the D-lineman. Who's the question mark? What do we know? You know, we lost Henrich. We lost Reimer. How does that room respond, right? A lot of production out of that room. A lot of new guys that need to step up. A lot of new bodies I think we're going to see rotated in there in the fall. But, you know, what does that room look like when we head into week one? I think it's going to look drastically different than any of us even believe it'll look right now. There's going to be names where we're like, oh, that guy, huh? And then there's going to be guys like, why isn't he playing? You know, I think it's going to be an intriguing position battle. You know, that's a key position in the Tony White defense. So, you know, the inside backer is definitely one that I'll be monitoring throughout the entirety of camp.
All right, great stuff. I think we covered it all. Always great chatting with you. And, yeah, next time we'll circle back. It will be fall camp time, and I know you are ready for that.
Yes, football. Need it.
Football. All right.
Football.
This has been an episode of The Sideline Slice presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. For Jeremiah Searles, I'm Jessica Cootie. Thanks for listening and watching.
Go Big Red.